Good evening. Welcome to the Global Journalist. Your regular host, Stuart Lurie, is away from the microphone this week. My name is Rod Gillette. As Stuart emphasizes each week, this is the program that says mid-Missourians, indeed millions of Americans, do consider international news important. They're eager to learn more about what's happening beyond their neighborhoods, why it's happening, and how it relates to their own lives and well-being. While this awareness of our place within a global society has always been important, unquestionably it has become more so within the past few months. That's why each week we assemble a group of journalists from throughout the world, assemble them electronically at least, not only to bring us up to date on what's going on within their coverage areas, but to discuss issues and problems of common interest from their vantage points. Tonight, two main items on our agenda. One is an issue that is not yet getting a great deal of attention by our own media here, and not yet anyway, and that's the issue of dissension, for lack of a better word, from the concept of total unquestioning support by our allies for American military action or the possibility of it beyond Afghanistan. The other issue, but related to the first, is the realization there are now American military forces in perhaps as many as 70, if not more, other countries. One of them the Republic of Georgia, once a part of the former Soviet Union, and now thought to be where Al-Qaeda operatives are being gathered. How did they get there, and what is the U.S. strategy there? Our panelists this evening are from Berlin, Germany, Stephen Erlanger, a Berlin bureau chief for the New York Times. From London, Tom Reed, better known perhaps as T.R. Reed, London bureau chief for the Washington Post, also a frequent contributor to the National Public Radio's Morning Edition, and in that way a familiar voice to many of our listeners. His latest book is The Chip. From Washington, Esther Schrader, Pentagon reporter for the Los Angeles Times. She wrote the piece that was on the front page of yesterday's Columbia Missourian, for example, making the point that as the war in Afghanistan heats up again, U.S. forces now are fighting the very kind of ground war we had tried to avoid. And our fourth panelist from Tbilisi, Georgia, is Akaki Gokchiashvili, the producer and anchor of a news program similar to our own 60 Minutes in this country. Welcome to you all, and let me begin by quoting from a thought piece that appeared in the New York Times a few days ago, written by our panelist in Berlin, Stephen Erlanger. The headline read, "Europe seethes as the U.S. flies solo in world affairs." And this was the lead paragraph. Europe's unconditional solidarity with the Bush administration, declared so quickly in the shock after the September 11th attacks, has faded almost as suddenly. And then you went on to point out, Mr. Erlanger, that President Bush's State of the Union reference to the axis of evil, his specific references in that connection to Iran, Iraq, and North Korea, and the subsequent speculation about where the war against terrorism will move next have not sat well with our European allies. So I'd like to do a little round robin here and ask each of you to comment first on what you understand to be the Bush administration's intentions and how all of that is being viewed by government leaders and the people with whom you meet where you are today. Let me start with you, if I may, Mr. Erlanger in Berlin.
Sure. I think, you know, what's happened is September 11th gave the Bush administration an organizing principle. It reminded George Bush of what it meant to be president, and it probably made him understand that he had a job to do, which was to win the war against terrorism, however you define it. The war against terrorism is a bit like fighting evil, so you have to be a bit more specific, and it needs a second stage. So, you know, I think Iraq has been a problem for quite a long time. The problem for the Europeans is they think President Bush and the Republicans in Washington now believe they can change the world. I think the Europeans generally have always felt safer trying to manage it. They think it creates less fuss and less unintended consequences, but they're less and less positive or confident that they can restrain Washington's messianic sense that the world is now subject to the working of American will.
Does this kind of speculation appear on the front pages of newspapers there in Germany, in Berlin?
Yes, I mean, it's all over the place. I mean, you know, to some degree in Washington this is regarded as kind of European whining, but the Germans have their own reasons to be ambivalent about the use of a military force. but there is a general feeling that all over Europe, I believe, that people don't want to be pushed into a war in the Middle East without very good cause, and they want it done, certainly if it is going to be done, as part of the UN process, as an authorized action by the UN Security Council, and they would not be happy at all to have the United States going off on its own to attack a country that at this point has not attacked the United States.
Tom Reed of the Washington Post in London, your thoughts on this from the country which has certainly been the closest and most supportive, I guess, of the Bush administration since all this began a few months ago.
Yeah, Rod, geez, it's really disheartening for me to have you say that most Americans don't know about this dissension among our European allies. I mean, we've all been filing it. It's very real, and I hope that people in Washington understand that they're having problems with our European allies, because they are. The Alliance Against Terrorism, as Steve said, was kind of a vague thing, but it was there. The support for the war in Afghanistan has been relatively strong, although there seems to be a notion in some circles in Europe that we should have gotten rid of the Taliban without dropping any bombs. They like the fact that the Taliban are gone, but they're very critical of us for dropping bombs on that country to get it done. And as the war on terrorism expands to other countries, the support is going to drop. That's true. I think if the U.S. goes against Iraq, that's the easiest case to make here in Europe. I think the British government of Tony Blair will definitely support a war on Iraq. Blair has been saying that more and more clearly. But some other countries might have a problem with it. Iran would be really tough, because Iran was fairly supportive of the war in Afghanistan, and several European countries and the European Union as a whole have been trying to build good relations with Iran. And in the past year, the European Union has sent three, count them, three diplomatic missions to Pyongyang, North Korea. They're trying to be friendly with North Korea, so they're quite angry with the U.S. for calling that country an evil country and an enemy. So we can extend the war on terror bit by bit, but with each extension, I think we're going to lose some of our European allies along the way.
Is Tony Blair now confronted, in your view, confronted with a very serious political problem?
No. Blair is much more popular in America than he is here, but he's very popular here. He has total control of his government. And at the moment, for example, they had a debate in the British Parliament yesterday about the notion of going to war against Iraq, and the only people complaining are roughly a dozen of totally predictable far-lefty old Labour, old members of his party. I mean, the predictable lefty demonstrators were out there, but all the other party, the rest of Tony Blair's Labour Party and the other parties were with him on this, so he's not going to have a problem as far as Iraq goes. If you get to Iran, that is going to be a political problem for Blair, and it's a diplomatic problem because he's been trying to build relations with Iran.
Is he, in your view, close enough, friendly enough with President Bush that if he were to do so, he could pick up the phone and call and say, hey, George, tone it down a little?
Well, he thinks that, and I would have thought that until yesterday when George Bush put the protective tariffs on steel imports, because his best ally in the world, Tony Blair, did call him and said, George, please don't do this. This will be a disaster if you do this, and Bush did it anyway. So it's an interesting question how much clout a phone call from Tony Blair has at this point.
In Washington, Esther Schrader, as the Pentagon reporter for the Los Angeles Times, What are you able to tell us about what seems to be going on in the Pentagon as regards plans for some kind of military action beyond Afghanistan?
Well, of course, it's difficult. It's difficult in Secretary Rumsfeld's Pentagon to get a sense at all of what their plans are. It's the tightest news management of any Pentagon in recent memory. We're also watching Rumsfeld engage in diplomacy in a greater measure than any Secretary of Defense in recent memory. I think that what Stephen said is very true. They are engaging in a sort of dancing, a delicate dance between their natural inclination to simply manage and the need now to engage in sort of change around the world. We don't know, of course, where they're going to go after Afghanistan. There's a lot of speculation of an offense in Iraq. There's a lot of speculation of offenses in various other parts of the world. But what we do know is that they are trying to leverage the military-to-military contact that they've established in many corners of the world for many decades to use them for the first time. Around the world, we've been engaging in training. We've been providing certain amounts of equipment, small amounts of help and aid to governments like Georgia, Uzbekistan, nascent former Soviet republics, for a decade or so. We've been providing a lot of this aid throughout Africa. And we didn't really know what we were going to use it for. We just wanted to have those relationships to call upon if need be. The time seems to be now, and they are ramping up the level of money that they're giving to those programs, and they have given indications that that is the vehicle that they may use to expand this war on terrorism in a lot of these little corners of the world that they hadn't given too much thought to before.
When we talk about using American military forces in other countries to help train the military forces in those countries, is that word train usually looked upon as step one, followed always by our own involvement in combat?
It hasn't been. It has been some places, obviously. Vietnam is the most obvious example. But in many other areas, we've simply believed that training and educating militaries would help create more stable governments in those countries. However, of course, this has been deeply controversial and it hasn't worked a lot of the time. We trained the military in Indonesia, and then they engaged in a number of atrocities in East Timor. We trained the military in El Salvador, and they engaged in atrocities there and in other places in Central America. Part of this training and education program was the infamous School of the Americas that trained a number of dictatorial regimes and militaries for dictatorial regimes. So it's been something that has been a bit under wraps and has not been given much attention in the past, except negative attention. I think the Pentagon is in a tough spot now. They're trying to use a program that hasn't always worked in the past and make it work for our interests. We'll see if it works.
What's your sense of the relationship between the Secretary of Defense, Rumsfeld, and the Secretary of State, Colin Powell?
You know, I got to say that I don't think any reporter covering the Pentagon really knows that. They've kept that very tight, and I wouldn't want to speculate on it. I mean, it's certainly obvious that they come from different from slightly different political perspectives, and they have different significantly different perspectives on, for example, how we ended our involvement in Iraq and the Iraq conflict the last time. So that has to, some of that history has to play into their current relationship. But they claim to be the best of friends.
Do any of the others of you have any thoughts on that, whether in the countries which you are covering there seems to be some speculation about this, which one has the ear of the president most of the time?
In Britain, in fact, in a lot of Europe, there's kind of a wishful thinking that there is a war going on between Powell and Rumsfeld and that Powell's going to win because he seems to have the point of view that's more amenable to the Europeans. And he, at least if you can believe the European press, he's the one of the two who's more concerned about how Europe feels about these things. Don Rumsfeld is a wonderfully charming guy. I think he's just charmed the pants off Americans. They seem to love him, but every time he's on TV or radio in Britain, everybody here gets outraged because he says these flip things. He says what he really thinks. and they don't like it. Do you remember, Rod, when there was this huge issue about the treatment of the Afghan prisoners in Camp X-Ray in Cuba?
Yes.
This was a massive issue in Britain. It just was amazing. And finally, somebody suggested to Rumsfeld that he come on the BBC in Britain and answer these complaints. And he came on, he was completely frank and open and charming, as he always is, and here's what he said. He said, I guarantee you we're treating these guys a heck of a lot better than they ever treated anybody, which is probably true. But, you know, as the Brits all pointed out, that's the wrong standard. To say that we're going to do slightly better than the Taliban did is really not the standard Americans should be aiming for. So if there is this argument going on, I think all of Europe is pulling for Powell.
And they're handling, and I just want to jump in there. I agree with you. They're handling his personal handling of the raid in which U.S. Special Forces captured and killed the wrong people. Not only did he not acknowledge that was a mistake, he was given numerous chances to do so. He called it unfortunate and explicitly denied that it was a mistake. It's really hard to see how when you capture and kill the wrong people, it's not a mistake.
Steve Erlinger, you started to say something a moment ago on this point.
Well, you know, I'm based in Berlin. I spend a lot of time in Brussels, but I used to be based in Washington, and I promise you the White House is doing a pretty good job of keeping it quiet, but the two men do not get on, and their buildings do not get on, and they disagree about how to manage lots of things. And the president, I think, is more active and decisive than he's sometimes given credit for. I think he listens a lot to the Vice President Dick Cheney and to Condi Rice, his national security advisor, who he believes are able to weigh the competing arguments on both sides. I mean, simply just to be brief on Iraq, the Pentagon, at least parts of the Pentagon, have been putting forward a new theory of intervention, simply saying that a country like Iraq presents such a clear and present danger to the United States. The United States has some kind of extended right of self-defense to go after it even without an act of war against the United States. And the State Department has been pushing very, very hard to say that's not going to wash. We have to go through the United Nations. We have to confront Saddam Hussein with his failure to abide by resolutions demanding weapons inspections, and if he fails then to provide good openness to serious weapons inspections, then at least there's a casus belli. So these arguments go on all the time. The government manages them very well. I do think Cheney and Rice are considered, by Bush at least, as relatively even-handed moderators among the arguments.
Let's move now to Akaki Gogeshashvili in Tbilisi, the capital of the Republic of Georgia, where he is a television anchor and producer of a program similar to our 60 Minutes. And ask you, sir, what do you know of all of the, I don't want to say just the plans, perhaps the actual implementation of those plans now, to be sending American money, equipment, personnel to your country? Or are they already there?
Well, currently the situation is a little ironic because we every day we read articles in different U.S. newspapers stating that troops are already here in Pakisi with their equipment and everything, although local officials deny flatly their presence here, which sounds more realistic because our correspondents and the sports don't report that existence there. Although the officials say that in the period of 2-3 weeks, about 200 trainers, instructors, will arrive to train about 2,000 Georgian soldiers. And I would like to emphasize this point because it's not the first instance where Pentagon gets involved into training of Georgian military. In 1993, 48 Georgian security officers have been trained in the United States to tackle terrorism. But what happens is that because of the unsustainability of U.S. foreign policy, then these forces, these people, were left without any guidance, without any control. And and the people in the government, controlled from Russia, they suppress them. And I'll tell you that five of them were killed and 12 were imprisoned and the rest were just scattered away from Georgia. And now there's another chance for Georgians to get actual military aid in the form of training. And we hope that the Bush administration will put some emphasis on sustainability of this policy. And if they start, they will continue.
Are there Al-Qaeda forces, operatives, if you will, in Georgia?
Well, after the operation in Afghanistan, we had information and actually notion that some terrorists have entered and infiltrated into the Pankisi Gorge, part of Georgia. But right at this point, we also have information, our sources say from the region, that after they started talking about U.S. troops coming to Georgia, most of them had already fled, and the rest are in the process of leaving the gorge. Yet, I think it would be very timely if the operation starts, at least in 2 weeks, as they promised.
Perhaps it would be good for our listeners if you were to give us a very brief geography lesson. I know you're at the very southern tip of what used to be the Soviet Union, bordering on, Turkey? And do you also border directly onto Afghanistan, or is there Uzbekistan in between?
No, we're bordering with Turkey and Russia in the north. Even after the breakdown of the Soviet Union, we were left by the West at large under the shadow of Russia. And Russia has completely have been in control of the situation, political situation in Georgia. And what are the fruits of this situation is that Georgia has lost part of its region, its territory, its Abkhazia. And we fear that if Russians force themselves into Pankisi Gorge now, they will stay there too forever, as it happened in Abkhazia when they went there as peacekeepers. But it's now 10 years that the territory is broken away, and only Russians control the territory. So we hope that the Bush administration initiative to get involved into this problem will somehow do some emphasis on contradicting Russian influence in the region.
Is Russia likely to, in your view, just stand by and watch American forces go into Georgia, or what?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Russian reaction, Russian political reaction on the information that Americans are going to come to Georgia has been severely critical. I mean, hysterical, I would say, because we heard members of parliament saying that if Americans will come to Georgia, they will recognize independence of Abkhazia, which is part of Georgia, and some other regions of Georgia that currently doesn't have any signs of ethnical conflict. They say that they are saying that they will initiate those conflicts. So this sounds absolutely threatening, and so we really don't want to see Russians actually getting engaged into one more regional zone of Georgia.
And I suppose that the United States then could become involved in some kind of an internal dispute as well.
Well, that would be at least some change and some hope for some better development of the situation.
Let me just kind of go around the table again. As we talk about the possibility of extending the war against terrorism elsewhere in the world, we seem to be talking almost exclusively about this being a mission for American military forces. Is this how it's being viewed now, or is that if America wants to carry this fight to other places indefinitely, then that's their fight? Or are other nations, despite their grumbling about it, likely to stay with us? What do you think? Tom Reed?
Britain will stay with us as far as Iraq. They'll stay with us in Afghanistan. They'll stay as far as Iraq. I think a couple of other European allies will stay that far. We'll lose some if we do go into Iraq, and beyond Iraq, I think we could even lose the British, which makes me think we're not going to do anything militarily against these other countries. I think if even Tony Blair says no, I just can't imagine Bush going ahead and doing it. So extended to Iraq, yes, the British will go along, and that's a good ally for the United States, and Bush can argue he's still leading an alliance and not acting unilaterally. Beyond that, I think he's really going to have a problem.
Steve Erlinger.
I think we have to understand there are a lot of allies and friends in the United States who are quite serious friends. In Europe, for instance, there's been a lot more intelligence sharing. There's been a lot more work on tracing the financial trail of Al-Qaeda. I mean, all this is an important part of the fight against terrorism. I mean, terrorism isn't just about armies. It's about police forces. It's about intelligence agencies. It's about people monitoring websites. So we get a lot of help and support from a lot of people around the world who understand this is a clear and present danger to them also. I think on Iraq, you know, we'll see what happens. My guess is the United States is going to need some kind of UN Security Council blessing for a war in Iraq, but it's obviously clearly been trying to overthrow the regime in secret ways for quite a long time. And I think we shouldn't forget that the United States and Britain have been bombing Iraq fairly regularly for the last 2 or 3 years anyway, since the UNSCOM weapons inspectors were withdrawn in the face of Iraqi problems last time. So, you know, yeah, I think it's going to go on. I think the United States, there are lots of voices that say we need friends, it's good to have friends, we can't be alone, and the question is how much will we actually patronize our friends or listen to them and try to bring them along?
Esther Schrader, we've got about 30 seconds. Your thoughts?
Right,
on this?
In Operation Anaconda in eastern Afghanistan, for the first time, Allied forces seem to be used in force, I believe Italian jets, French jets, if I'm not mistaken. And yesterday, I believe, were the first fatalities associated with the Europeans' presence in Afghanistan. I believe the Germans lost two of their troops, and perhaps the Danish also had some injuries or fatalities in an explosion in the capital there in Afghanistan. They don't know what caused that explosion. And they're deeply involved in peacekeeping. So they have, as my colleagues here say, been involved in this. But the larger question, too, is not only what kind of help we'll get from our allies, but how much the U.S. wants to let governments like Georgia, Sudan, Yemen deal with terrorists on their own, how much we want to just train them and equip them, or whether we actually do want to send our own combat troops into the country. That remains to be seen.
I appreciate all of your thoughts. I want to thank you. We have run out of time. Thanks to Steve Erlinger, New York Times in Berlin, Akaki Gokciashvili in Tbilisi, Georgia, Esther Schrader for the Los Angeles Times in Washington, and T.R. Reid, London Bureau Chief for the Washington Post from London. Thank you to all of you. Stuart Lurie should be back next week. My name is Rod Gillette.